They'll check your eyes on any given day, but they'll also research pitcher's ERAs from the AL to the NL to the minor leagues. John and Zeke got you covered, Yes, please, now it's time to sit back, listen and relax, because you're about to hear at least an hour of baseball fact. Just two dads telling jokes, and they're probably wearing Crocs. But ladies and gents, here come the Dugout Docs. Hello, everybody, and welcome back once again. It's another week. It's another episode of the Dugout Docs. I am John Ismond, alongside my good friend and co-host here, Zeke Grissom. Zeke, how you doing this week, my friend?
Doing great, John. Had a fun weekend. If you're listening last week, you know what I'm talking about. If you didn't, go check that out. But the guest appearance was not Lady Gaga, John.
Mm.
Instead, it was Lionel Richie on Friday.
Okay.
Pretty cool. And then Keith Urban on Saturday.
Wow.
So still had a good lineup there, and it was a lot of fun. I wasn't there, but what I was doing is I was hitting on a golf simulator in the basement of Katie's family's place, and it was awesome.
That sounds pretty fun. Zeke, what are your what numbers you putting up on the driving range?
So I got up to 270.
Dang.
On my drive.
Okay.
The fun thing about this thing that I thought was awesome, as somebody who loves all the analytics in baseball,
yeah,
this thing had a sensor over top as you swung, looking down at the ball. And then it had two sensors ahead of you, so it could calculate points in space. And what it gave you after you made the swing and the ball finally stopped rolling and whatever, out on the fairway, it gave you ball velocity, swing velocity, whether you were in or out, or out or in on your swing direction, whether your club face was open or closed, and by how many degrees.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's
yeah.
crazy. And then it even showed a short, like, 4-second clip of you actually making contact with the ball, so you could see exactly where you hit it on the face of the club.
Oh, wow. Very interesting.
Like, if I could do this every day, I would be a golf pro.
You'd be a beast. Yeah. Hey, 270 yards, pretty good. I might reckon 270 feet, maybe.
Are you a big golfer, Don, at all?
No. I'm not.
Have you ever been?
I had one summer when I was in college where I would go to a small golf course. It was called the Charlevoix Country Club, but it was really a public golf course. And I played a couple rounds. I probably have played 3 or 4 rounds of golf in my life.
Okay.
Not very good. Haven't played since. Now, my brother's trying to get me back into it. So I feel like I could go to the driving range and maybe have some fun there. But in terms of a whole day out on the course, Zeke, I'm kind of an inside guy. I'm going to be honest with you.
That's okay, man.
I don't love going to the beach because I burn very easily. I don't like going outside because I have really bad allergies as well. Uh-huh. And
you would die in Tennessee then. Man.
I would die. I did die in Tennessee, Zeke. I did die for 4 years. I'm a sweater too. So it's like, that's a trifecta of reasons for me to stay inside and drink Diet Coke in my basement.
There you go, John.
Yeah.
There you go.
But maybe someday, Zeke, maybe that's why I'm thinking golf simulator might be more my speed.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah, it was I'm trying to think of what we did this weekend. We had a big day. My dog's gotcha day, birthday, if you will, was on Saturday. So we told Eloise if she went passy free for a week, we would go get ice cream on Levi's Gotcha Day on Saturday. So that's what we did. Mm-hmm. She did no passy. She says no passy.
Nice.
For a full week. We got some ice cream. We had a good walk. We had a great time. And then on Sunday, I went and got a CE. So I had to go to a lecture, which was still fun. And that was the gist of my weekend, really.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
How was it seeing one of our classmates?
Oh, it was good. Yeah, got to see our friend Brett.
Awesome.
Which I see, it's been a while since I saw Brett. Usually it's like we hang out and once every couple of months, and I will literally text him and be like, hey, what's going on? Like, how's your life doing? He's like, oh, let's wait until we're in person. He like has this big dramatic reveal of everything that's happened in his life, but he's doing well. He's doing well down in downtown, and things are looking up for Dr. Brill, I'd say.
Awesome, man.
Yeah,
Awesome.
he's doing really well.
Is he a baseball fanatic, John? I never really got that from him.
He is not. No, he is not. He his favorite guess would you guess his favorite baseball team prior to moving to Chicago?
He seems like a St. Louis guy.
No,
Cardinals.
no. He's from, for context, he's from West Virginia.
I have no idea. Who?
Pittsburgh Pirates.
Really? No
Yeah.
wonder he's not a baseball fan.
He
I
was talking to me about Starling Marte on Sunday. I'm like, dude, Starling
know.
Marte has been bouncing around every in the MLB.
Is he with the Pirates right now?
No, I think he's still with the Mets, actually,
Okay.
which we'll talk about here shortly.
Nice lead
Nice
in
little
there. Yeah.
segue. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was good seeing him. And other than that, just looking forward to March Madness here in a couple weeks. Looking forward to spring training's already in full swing, so we're seeing a lot of stuff there. So plenty of excitement in the sports world. So speaking of which,
Absolutely.
Z, should we kick off our preview here right now?
I think we should. Let's do it, John. We
All
got
right.
some exciting teams to talk about today.
We've got some exciting teams to talk about today. Indeed, we're going to run down our AL East and our NL East. It's going to be a little bit of a preview, Zeke. We're going to kind of hit some of the bullet points of the offseason, as well as kind of what we're seeing in terms of projected lineup and rotations, just to see where all these teams are at in the AL and the NL East, respectively, heading into 2024. So let's start with the team in the AL East that won last year. Had a really amazing run. Not a team that we expected to win, but it was the young Baltimore Orioles. So we're starting at the top here. So Zeke, probably the biggest story of the offseason was trading for Corbin Burns. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Huge difference maker for sure. It seems like this team is moving in the right direction in terms of acquiring some massive talent. Corbin Burns, we talked about, needed to be in the rotation. So that's great. Another thing that we got to talk about a little bit is the signing of Craig Kimbrel. So Craig Kimbrel, 1 year, $13 million contract, famously was seen at Walgreens by Kevin Grissom a couple
That's
weeks
right.
ago. But I really like this move, Zeke, because last year Felix Bautista really had an amazing first half of the season. He was a great closer, ends up tearing his UCL. He's going to miss likely the entire season. So bringing in Kimbrel gets you a veteran closer who's going to shore up that bullpen. Should be good for him. Really, the biggest need for Baltimore was the pitching, and they addressed both the bullpen and the rotation. Pretty good moves, I'd say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And really, going back several years now, the Orioles have always been able to really build up a good closer. So, bringing in a veteran like Kimbrel, I think that'll work out really well for him. One thing I would say about their pitching is Burns is obviously the big add here. Great guy, lots of talent. He's kind of had a shaky start to the spring so far. I was trying to look up what it was, but I know he gave up several runs, few walks, several hits yesterday or a day or two ago. But I
No.
think he perennially starts out the season just a little bit slow.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I mean, you're talking about switching ball clubs too, so there's probably some things that coaching staff wants to try to reorient in him. Maybe he's experimenting a little bit. You hear that from veteran pitchers as well, trying new stuff out and experimenting, maybe trying to add an, I don't think he's necessarily trying to add another pitch, but some pitchers do that. So something to keep an eye on though, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What do you
John,
think? Yeah, what were you gonna say?
what players do you find you're most excited about on the Orioles this year,
Oh man, I mean, outside
outside the
think
pitchers?
I think we got to talk about the number one prospect in baseball, former top pick Jackson Holliday. It's looking like, I mean, this kid just seems like a total stud. Went all the way from single A through triple A, just demolished, hit the cover off the ball at every step. In 2023, Zeke, we're talking about a 323 average, 941 OPS, 12 home runs, 24 stolen bases. This is a guy that's slotted at second base. He just hit who'd he hit a dinger off of? I just saw that. Was that today or yesterday?
Maybe in the day.
Was it today? I think he hit a home run off. I can't remember who it was, but already making a big impact in camp. Zeke, it seems like he should probably be the starting second baseman on opening day. We'll see if he starts in AAA or not. But is it kind of getting to the point where it's unfair? I mean, not only do we have Jackson Holliday in the wings, but Kesten Hjersted as well. Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman have been just fantastic at the pro level. Dude, what's going on in Baltimore? How are they doing this so efficiently?
I think management has done such a great job of building this team, man. It's really a la Atlanta Braves 4 or 5 years ago, where they've just done a great job with their farm system, raising homegrown talent, and really developing them into winners. And I think whenever teams are able to do that, there's just a camaraderie and a team aspect to it that just goes beyond going out there and buying guys. Like some teams do. So there's nothing that's more exciting to me than a young team that's got a bunch of future stars on it. And I think that's exactly what the Orioles have this year. A guy I'm excited about is actually last year's Rookie of the Year, Gunnar Henderson. Henderson started out the season really slow, really struggled to get going, even batting below the Mendoza line going into April. But this young talent really kind of picked things up in June. And next thing you knew, he was leading the way for the Rookie of the Year award.
Yeah, it was really between him and Josh Young for a while, you know, and then Young of course gets hurt, so it was really Henderson's to lose. But yeah, man, very, very impressive. And I think you're right. I think it's very rare. Let me backtrack a second here. I think one hole that a lot of people are trying to punch in the Orioles, and part of the reason they kind of flopped in the playoffs last year, is a lack of veteran experience. But I think what's interesting is their main leaders are the young guys. Adley Rutschman has really been the vocal leader of this team, even though he's only been in the league, what, 2 seasons now? So you're right. There is something about this young core that is exciting. From a leadership level, from building a team, building a roster, they've got seems like high quality players in the clubhouse as well. Are you a little bit worried about not having that veteran guy who's been there before? I know having Corbin Burns there is going to help a lot, but in that lineup, I mean, you're talking about who's the most experienced, probably Santander or Cedric Mullins. Still, you know, what do you think about that? You think that's going to be an issue?
I don't think it's going to be an issue. Like you said, I think these young guys, especially Rutschman, and even, Henderson, when I've watched interviews of those guys, they've really held their own, answered questions really well, have seemed very confident in their answers and their philosophies. And I think that goes a long way, especially bringing up some of the younger guys, even. But then you mix in a guy like Cedric Mullins that's been around the league and has done well in recent years. Mountcastle at this point is more of a veteran than a rookie at this point as well.
That's a good point.
Austin Hayes, another guy. I mean, they've got enough there. They're just not your leading talents on the team.
They're not your JD Martinez or yeah, right, the Miguel Cabreras, you know, who've been
Right.
forever, which is
Yeah.
fair.
So I think they've got enough there. And they've got the experience from last year. A lot of these guys were at least on the roster come playoff time last year. So I think just making it to the playoffs, even if you don't make it to the end, is one of the most valuable things you can have from a team perspective.
Definitely. Definitely. One thing to look out for, though, is, you know, although we did strengthen the rotation with Burns in Baltimore, little worried about Kyle Bradish. He really had a breakout year. He's probably the best pitcher for Baltimore for the majority of last season. He's got a UCL sprain, so he's going to start the season on the IL. A little scare with Gunnar Henderson. He's got a little oblique soreness. They're still saying he's probably going to be ready towards opening day, but couple of things you want, just to keep an eye on there. But yeah, I mean, hopefully Grayson Rodriguez can take a step forward this year. He's been that guy that's been on the radar to have a breakout season. So hopefully they'll be able to survive. It's a little unfair, Zeke, to ask you if they're going to win 101 games again like they did in 2023. But one thing I wanted to mention, their over-under right now that I'm seeing is 89 and a half. Do you think the Orioles are winning more or less than 90 games this year?
I think that's a smash all over, man.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I agree with you. And I think part of the apprehension and the reason that number is lower is just because we're seeing the Yankees get more competitive. We're expecting a little bit of a drop off for not a drop off for Baltimore, but tempered expectations. But I'm with you, man. I think Baltimore heading into opening day, it's hard to argue the Yankees or the Blue Jays or the Rays bolstering over them, especially after what we saw last year.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be another competitive division again this year, but I mean, my money would still be on the Orioles.
Yeah. Well,
But last year even, what were the final records for the
Tampa
division?
was really close, if I remember correctly. I think it was Tampa in second, and then yeah, they were 90, only 2 games back. So the Rays almost won 100 games last year. But the Blue Jays were actually 12 games back with 89 wins. They did qualify for the postseason, so that's something to keep in mind. I mean, Rays were doing great, but Blue Jays snuck in there as well.
Yeah, because what I'm looking at is Blue Jays, Rays, and Orioles would have beaten that over under last year, so I think that's very possible
I
for
think it's
the Orioles there.
I totally agree with you. Well, some people are labeling the Orioles' biggest competition as being the next team that we can transition into talking about, and that's the New York Yankees. We talked at length a couple weeks ago about the Juan Soto trade, right? And I think what the Yankees did well this year, this offseason, is they really saw a weakness in the outfield. They saw a weakness in the lineup and they addressed it. You get Juan Soto, right, who's primed to have a potentially career year in a great ballpark in New York. You also add some depth with Trent Grisham. Alex Verdugo, too, Zeke, is another guy that's coming over to the Bronx. So really that lineup looks a lot better than what it did in 2023. But they did lose a little bit of depth in terms of pitching, and I think that's going to kind of be the biggest concern for the Yankees heading into 2024. You lose Michael King, you lose guys like Randy Vasquez, Johnny Brito in the Soto trade. So, what do you think, Zeke? Do you think the Yankees are in a better spot on paper than they were heading into 2023 with the addition of some of these guys?
I think so, John.
Okay.
I think the Yankees' philosophy is going to be they're going to try to outscore other teams. And Soto has looked awesome in spring training so far. Hasn't made it to the Big Apple yet because they're still in spring training. And that could change things a little bit. But he seems to be really warming up to that Yankees pinstripe uniform. So I think acquiring him just outweighs any other sort of downside, really. And I think they've gotten enough there. I know we talked about previously they've got Cole, who has been one of the most consistent starting pitchers in recent memory. Is Rodon hurt right now? Or was
Dude,
that
when is Rodon not
Julio?
hurt? When is Rodon not hurt?
Yeah. So you don't really bank a whole lot on him. But I do think adding Stroman. They signed Marcus Stroman to a 2-year, $38 million contract. I think it was a good one. I think it was solid because he is usually somebody that's dependable. He's not going to be your, you wouldn't prefer him be your number one or two guy.
Which he
But
was in Chicago, right?
yes. But at your third or fourth in the rotation guy, that's, you want guys like that that you know are going to take the ball when it's their turn. Put up a quality game. They did have some key losses though, John. What do you think about losing guys like Severino and Montas?
Well, the thing with Severino and Montas is they were never really healthy at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a concern there, of course. I mean, Severino's a guy that we've been talking about for the last 2 or 3 years is, oh, this is the year, this is his breakout year, you know, and it never happens because of injury. So I'm not too concerned about them losing, but I'm a little concerned about the rotation in general. I kind of agree with your Stroman point, but that's another guy that's he's had patches of great pitching. He's had patches where he's looked terrible. And outside of Gerrit Cole, that's the entire rotation. Carlos Rodon, fantastic in San Francisco, a complete disaster last year. Marcus Stroman, a little bit of up and down. Nestor Cortez, since they changed that pitch clock, he really struggled last year. And I don't really trust Clark Schmidt that much either. I think the main issue for New York right now is they need another fairly reliable pitcher. There is a guy on the market. We've talked about it before. But again, even a guy like Blake Snell, when Blake Snell's great, he's great. When he's not great, he's freaking abysmal. So you're still talking about a lot of these high ceiling, low floor guys that are really risky outside of Gerrit Cole. That's the only concern that I really see. I think bullpen's going to be fantastic for New York. Okay. But I still think they're going to be lingering around the deadline, especially with their injury history in the rotation. They're going to want to have added a little bit of depth, which they traded away to acquire Soto and Verdugo. So I'm a little concerned on that front with pitching depth.
Absolutely. Two guys that I think are going to be almost a linchpin for the Yankees. One of which is Gleyber Torres, a guy who's kind of had his ups and downs, similar to you talking about the pitching. He's had his times where he just sucked. But then he's also shown the talent and the pedigree and the upside that he's had all along as well. So I think if he can have somewhat of a breakout here. Batting average over 270, get me 25, 26, 30 home runs, a few stolen bases here and there. That mixed in with the power bats that they have in Judge and Soto could provide a lot of firepower for the Yankees.
Zeke, you know what it is? You know what else it is for Gleyber Torres?
What's that?
Contract year.
Contract year. That's the year that you want guys on your team.
Absolutely.
So, another guy's Anthony Volpe. He's a guy who kind of came out last spring and looked awesome. People are really excited about him, kind of fluffed him up a little bit. In the minor leagues, he has batted 260, hit several home runs, has always been a good RBI producer, as well as a bunch of stolen bases. If he can come out and not even be rookie of the year caliper or even all-star caliper, but if he can just come out and be consistent, especially when it comes to getting on base for these guys, I think he is another guy that's going to be really important for this team this year.
Definitely. Totally agree with you. And I think adding Soto into that lineup is going to do wonders for them. I think it's going to open things up and lessen the pressure on some other guys there, especially a guy like Anthony Rizzo, who struggled through injuries last year, had a really down year after a good first season in New York. I'm expecting Rizzo to go up. I'm expecting Torres' stock to go up. And Verdugo as well. So I think that's good points. We got to see Gleyber Torres and Anthony Volpe, the homegrown Yankees, kind of take the helm here. So I like the Yankees. You know, I've always been very high on the Yankees, but when I look at the over-under here as being 94 and a half, I'm just too worried. I can see too many wrong things happening like they did last year, more so than I see close to 100 win season. So 94 and a half, I'm probably going under. I still think they probably qualify for the playoffs, but I'm looking more at about 92 wins for them. 91, I mean.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, very good. That's the Yankees. I mean, that's a big deal here. But see, a team that's just got me pulling my hair out this offseason. It's really frustrating. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because nobody wants to go to this place because maybe they're taxed more in a different country, or there's got to be some reason as
It's
to why they're
got to be
losing
about
everywhere.
taxes, right?
Got to be about taxes, right? Because what is going on in Canada? The Toronto Blue Jays. Really a very odd off season, right? It very
Mm-hmm.
quiet off season, which was really my surprise. This is a team that did qualify last year in the wild card, played the Twins, really fell flat, especially offensively. And they lose their one of their bigger stars in Matt Chapman, who's a four-time Golden Glove winner. You also lose some smaller pieces like Jordan Hicks, Whit Merrifield, and Hyunjoo Ryu, who I believe is moving overseas now. But quite a few subtractions with not that many additions. I mean, now that you have that hole gone on the third base side of the field, you replace that with Justin Turner, who I like Justin Turner, right? He's going to produce for you. And then you also have Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. They also did re-sign Kevin Kiermaier in center field. But man, there's a lot that's left to be desired here for Toronto, especially when it comes to that lineup.
Absolutely. They literally made no moves for a
No.
team that couldn't get it done last year, really, in the grand scheme of things. They definitely downgraded. Going from Matt Chapman to Justin Turner, definitely a downgrade. Jordan Hicks, who has shown some talent at times. All of these things are downgrades.
Agreed.
And in a very, very crowded division, I don't think you can do that. Another downgrade that happened today or yesterday is Kevin Gausman, their ace, I think is now sidelined with some shoulder soreness or tired shoulder, something that doesn't really sound great. And the once Cy Young contender, Alek Manoah, continues to struggle.
No, it's been bad.
Don't know what happened to that guy, but he has just fallen off of a cliff and can't seem to find his way back. So, really, if I'm a Blue Jays fan right now, I have nothing to be excited about.
No, I'd be upset. I really would be. Because you look at this lineup and it feels like not a ton has really changed. You've got George Springer, who's, he puts together some solid time, but he's not the George Springer that he was 5 years ago. Vladdy Jr. I mean, we love Vladdy Jr. You got Justin Turner, as we mentioned, Bo Bichette coming back. He's very consistent. Kevin Kiermaier, who's known primarily for his defense. Alejandro Kirk, Dalton Varsho, who really struggled his first year in Toronto. We'll see if he can turn it around. Then Isaiah, I'm not excited about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa or Kevin Biggio, in all honesty. That's a lineup that's lacking a lot of pop outside of Bichette and Vlad, in all honesty.
Yeah, I really think this is a year that if the Blue Jays are going to succeed, Vlad has to have an Aaron Judge type season. And I just don't know that he has that in him. Because Aaron Judge is on another level just because of his size and his ability. But I really think Guerrero is going to have 36, 40, maybe even 45 home runs, with a great on-base percentage to really lead this team to the top of the division. I think it's going to be really hard for him, especially with the loss of Gausman, who I haven't seen how long he's going to be out yet, but sore or tired shoulder sounds like something that's going to linger for a while as well.
And I hope it's minor, I hope it's more precautionary, but you're right. That's the last thing you want to hear, especially because it looks like with the lack of moves that they made, the main plan here is to have solid pitching, get guys who get on base and try to play small ball here. I mean, that's what it looks like. And
Yeah.
see what Vlad and Bichette and maybe George Springer can do in the power department. I don't love it. I mean, if Gausman is healthy, yes, he's great. One of the best pitchers in baseball. Jose Barrios has also pitched well. Chris Bassitt, good as well. I think even Yusei Kikuchi as a number four starter is fantastic. So I'm not too worried about the rotation outside of Manoah, who I'm not even convinced is going to be a part of that rotation, for being
Right.
honest, if this continues. And pitching wise, not really that much of a concern, but just seems like just a lot of pop, a lot left to be desired for Toronto. And especially when you're looking at some of these guys like Cody Bellinger re-signing with Chicago, Jorge Soler going over to San Francisco, there's not a lot of guys left on the market that can help you out. So it looks like this is what they're going to go with. So not very encouraging.
No, not at all. Another team that I feel like had a very uneventful offseason, John, is the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yes.
Really, the only eventfulness that they had was for bad reasons. Wander Franco, who Is facing 2 to 10 years in prison on charges of abduction, abuse, money laundering, and inappropriate relationships with a 14-year-old. John, as a father of a daughter, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, it makes me sick to my stomach, man. I if this proves to be true, which for all intents and purposes, it seems like it is. I mean, this man should never ever see a baseball diamond outside of a prison yard, if I'm being honest. It's disgusting, Zeke. It really is. Especially somebody who's like you said, a dad of a young girl, right? Just some of the things that he's done of I don't know how much you've read into it, but some of the messages that he was sending to this girl, I mean, is literally a girl, little girl, is just disgusting. The fact that he was really in cahoots with the mother to make this happen and exploiting the child for the mother was kind of in on it, exploiting the child for money, and just a really ugly, disgusting situation. And the thing with Franco too is he always seemed to have a really bad temper. It didn't seem like things were going very well in terms of the clubhouse. And it doesn't seem like he was really a huge clubhouse guy to begin with. And oftentimes I feel like that's a sign of character. And I don't think, you can have all the talent in the world, but you can't get away with heinous crimes like this. So I hope that if he is guilty, if this is something that actually happened, that he gets full punishment. And I hope we never see him on television ever again.
Absolutely, John. Couldn't agree more.
That being said, Zeke, right after we
Did
come up with
the
something,
Rays really make any changes this offseason, John?
they didn't do much to address the gaping hole of losing a superstar caliber player. Really not that much. I mean, you look at this lineup here, Zeke. You've got Yandy Diaz, Brandon Lau, who's been okay, Randy Arozarena, who we like. A guy that I do like is Josh Lowe. Josh Lowe, Lau, I always forget. He really had a breakout season in 2023, so he's going to help. Isak Paredes is also very, very underrated. Jonathan Aranda, you've got Jose Siri as well, but I know it's their thing, Zeke. I know the Rays play small ball. I know they develop guys. I know they're big on the analytics. But when you lose Wander Franco, you also talk about losing even a guy like Luke Raley, who is contributing in the lineup, is gone. You also have Tyler Glass now, who is probably your best pitcher, is gone as well. I'm not very excited about the Rays this season at all, but I haven't been for the last couple of years, so maybe they proved me wrong yet again. What do you think?
Yeah. I think the Rays are an organization that have proven to be reliable, even in the face of adversity, in the face of doubt. So this is another lineup that's filled with a lot of young guys, a lot of underappreciated talents. I know Jonathan Aranda, as well as Jose Caballero, are pretty highly touted prospects. That I know the Rays are expecting a lot out of. So we'll see how they turn out. And even when you look at their rotation, okay, Aaron Civale has had times where he's been really good. To be frank, I don't know a lot about Zach Little. But Ryan Pepiot is the one from the Dodgers, right?
I believe so.
I think he showed flashes at times and had a few breakout games before being traded. Taj Bradley has looked like a rookie of the year candidate there until he got hurt, I think, last year for a little bit. And then, of course, Shane Boz is very good whenever he can make it back from Tommy John. So this is another team I wouldn't really go put money on, but I also would not sit there and be surprised if at the end of the year they're competing for the number one spot in the division, even though it seems very unlikely at this moment.
No, you're absolutely right. And kind of as we talk through it a little bit more, they're kind of taking a lot of big gambles here, in a lineup, in terms of lineup and in terms of rotation, and they won 99 games last year. A good amount of those players are back. You're kind of talking me back into the Rays a little bit. So if their evaluation of talent is correct once again, hey, we could see them very well compete for a playoff spot or even the division. But I feel like it's got to happen at some time. It's got to happen where the Rays finally take a little bit of a dip. And I feel like if it's going to happen, I think it's going to be this year. I may be wrong. I'm well prepared to come in here in August and say, man, I was wrong at the deadline, right? But
Yeah.
for now, I'm going to say that the Orioles and the Yankees finish ahead of Tampa Bay this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
No
then
argument there.
Toronto, we'll see.
Yeah. I don't think Toronto's beating them.
Well, there's a lot of question about who 1, 2, and 3 are. The pretty firm consensus, I would say, around folks in baseball regarding who is going to be number 5 in this division or who is expected to be. And dude, that's the Boston Red Sox. This is a team, man, that's really got me scratching my head as well. It seemed like they were primed for a run. You know, it's not that things were horrible last year, but it seemed like they were going to be a buyer. They were in a lot of talks for a lot of guys, especially a guy like Jordan Montgomery, who they may have no choice but to try to give an offer to after the news we got today. And we'll get to that in a second. But looking at the big picture, you're losing Adam Duvall, who had a really great season. I know Duvall's a guy who's been on the Braves. I'm sure you've always kept an eye on him, but he's very productive when he was on the field with Boston last year.
Absolutely. I think when they traded for O'Neill, that may have kind of put the Duvall in your there out. But
Yeah.
if I was a team out there and I need an outfielder, Duvall would be a guy I'd want. I mean, just 100%.
Yeah.
You mentioned Lucas Giolito
Oh.
earlier, who signed a big two-year contract.
Yep.
Got diagnosed with a partial UCL tear today or yesterday, one of the two.
This
It really might be
morning,
out for the whole season.
he might be gone. And
Really, probably 2 or 3 months into next season too. Even if he had surgery in the next 2 or 3 weeks, so this is a huge blow for the Red Sox. Huge blow.
crushed it, crushing man, it's crushed.
And it's really for a guy they paid up for a little bit,
Yep.
and he'd really been wishy-washy. So. I think that's going to prove to be a terrible signing, unfortunately, for the Red Sox.
Yeah, that's bad luck, you know, it really is. But if I'm being totally honest with you, Zeke, I mean, even with the rotation, let's assume that Giolito were healthy, you're still looking at a potential rotation of Giolito, Pivetta, Nick Pivetta, Brian Bello, Carter Crawford, Tanner Houck, a lot of young guys, with Lucas Giolito and Pivetta really kind of being the more veterans there. I still feel like if you're trying to compete for a playoff spot, that rotation's not strong enough. I thought that, yeah, if Giolito's your two and you go add a Jordan Montgomery, who's been really linked to Boston, hey, you may be cooking with something here.
Yeah.
But losing Giolito, I mean, that's a big enough injury loss that I think front office right now is probably saying, hey, are we actually going to try to push and make some moves here to try to be competitive? Or are we just going to mail it in, get some more guys' experience in the rotation and in the lineup? Because we've got a lot of young talent here that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Is it time that we just kind of mail it in for 2024? And it's probably some difficult discussions being had right now in the Boston front office.
This would really be a situation where, those have got to be the conversations they're having in the front office. And if Blake Snell cannot get an extended contract like I know he wants, and he has to go to one of these 1 year prove it deals, I think a team like the Red Sox would be a great opportunity because it's in a big market. And they get to the trade deadline. If they fall out of the race, then that is a huge trade piece that
For
they could
sure.
acquire prospects and talent, young talent to go along with their young hitters. So if Snell's looking for a 1 year deal, even if it's 30, 35 million, that might be worth it for a team like the Red Sox.
And I think they might have to go and do something like that, see, because I don't know if you've heard the chatter, but we've seen Rafael Devers and Kenley Jansen, who are both in the clubhouse, kind of speak outwardly regarding upper management. And they're saying, hey, we know what we need, right? Essentially saying, like, hey, we thought that we were going to win. We thought we were going to build to be a competitor. And general management's not going out and really getting those guys that they thought they would. So there's a little bit of ire and disappointment within the clubhouse before the season starts. It just feels like a recipe for disaster, if I'm being honest. Like it doesn't seem like it's going to be fun. And you've also got Alex Cora, who's talked about, hey, I don't think I'm going to be a manager forever. He's made those comments as well. I mean, this could be really bad for Boston.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a little concerned.
On the flip side, John, when I was looking through this, the Red Sox lineup looks a little more inviting than I think I would have said even a few days ago. Okay. When I look at the lineup, I can make a case for it.
Sure.
You
Sell
got a
me.
guy, Jaron Duran, who has significant on-base potential, has a little bit of speed too. And you love having those sorts of guys up top of the lineup. Then if they can get a bounce back year from Trevor Story, okay, a little bit of a breakout from a young Tristan Casas, who has great prospect pedigree, has a great swing, a lot of power to go with it. Again, those are guys getting on base. Guys that are there for somebody like Rafael Devers, who has proven himself to be an elite talent in the league, to drive guys in.
Yeah.
But that's not even it. Then you
Okay.
have Masataka Yasushida, who had a little bit of a cold spell, I think, towards the end of the season last year. But there for a while, really looked like he might be one of these artificial rookie of the years last year. No, we talked about that a little bit last year. I'm not sure about these transfers from Japan coming in and calling themselves rookies. But anyways,
Yeah, sure.
that's a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah.
Then you got Tyler O'Neill, who has had some great moments with the Cardinals. The guy that, did you ever see him at Redbirds?
No, I don't think
No.
so.
So, first year of optometry school, I'm pretty sure. We went to a game and he hit an absolute moonshot down the right field line out of the stadium completely. And it was awesome. But you put all these guys together and you can start to find a way to where these guys can put up runs. Now, they may have to put up a lot of runs because of the rotation. But I could see them working their way to a 500 year. Not a division winning year, but I could see them making it up to 500.
We'll see. I think Alex Cora traditionally has done a lot with a little, kind of like what you've mentioned before. I just think the blow, I mean, you're also looking at, they don't have Chris Sale this year. They don't have James Paxton this year, who was pretty good for him. They don't have
They
Lucas.
didn't have
I
those
don't know.
guys the last 2 years, anyways, John.
I mean, I guess. I'm concerned, Zeke. I'm concerned. I'm not high on the Red Sox. I see what you're saying. I do think Story will get better. Rafael Devers is very, very reliable. But yeah, you're putting a lot of stock in some of these young guys. And maybe they'll rise to the maybe they'll be the next Baltimore, right? I just don't think it'll happen yet. But we'll see. That's a fair point. That's a fair point. Well, Zeke, hold on. All right, got my mic all set back up. So, Zeke, that pretty much does it for the AL East here. I'm sure we're going to touch on these teams much more throughout the season. But let's shift on over to a division that you're very familiar with over in the NL East, okay? The lesser of the leagues, the National League, which, American League guy at heart. But, Zeke, the first team to talk about is the leaders in the clubhouse. And we spent a whole hour last week talking about them, or at least half hour, the Atlanta Braves. So not much to touch on here. Talked about Jared Kelenic and Chris Sale. Chris Sale's looking awesome in spring training.
Absolutely. Chris Sale is looking like his old self. Charlie Morton has also looked really good. Two veteran guys that are very touchy-feely sort of pitchers. They really have to have the feels for their curveball and sliders. But so far, so good for them. Really, the biggest storyline so far for the Braves this preseason has been a mild hiccup with Ronald Acuna, who had a little bit of inflammation around his kneecap or his meniscus. MRI came back and showed that. But when he visited his doctor that did his repair of his knee a couple years ago, doctor said he'd be fine. Really kind of goes along with Acuna. I mean, love the guy. He's obviously awesome, but sometimes he can be a little bit of a prima donna. So let's get him a few days off, get him rested up, and management seems to think he'll be just fine to start the season.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview with Alex Anthopoulos on MLB Radio yesterday, and they're basically like, it's precautionary. I mean, I think the big concern is it was the knee that was injured prior that had to be repaired. So I think that's the main thing is making sure that he's all set to go there. But yeah, he should be ready to go for opening day. So yeah, we expect the Braves to be the cream of the crop in the National League East. Let's talk a little bit about the team right behind them, who's been trying to, they've been dethroning them in the postseason, just not the regular season, right? And that's the Philadelphia Phillies. So not a whole lot of turnover for Philadelphia. One big piece that they did lose was Rhys Hoskins. He's going to Milwaukee. Now, Rhys Hoskins is a guy that really, I feel like, was kind of undervalued by Philadelphia. He had a little bit of injury trouble as well. They also lose Michael Lorenzen, who was a Tiger last year, our all-star representative, did throw a no-hitter with Philly last year. Phillies moving on from him. He's still available. He's still on the market. Hey, Boston, maybe give him a call. And Craig Kimbrel as well. So Craig Kimbrel's gone. We mentioned he's going to Baltimore. But really, not a whole lot of additions, Zeke. I mean, you add a guy like Colby Allard. You got Spencer Turnbull, who's a former Tiger as well. Whit Merrifield's a nice little utility guy that you can kind of throw anywhere on the diamond. But they extended their two big aces, right? I would call them aces. I'd call Zach Wheeler their ace for sure. He just got extended a couple of days ago. And then Aaron Nola signs a 7-year contract as well. Good move, Zeke. I thought so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They really locked in their two aces, just as you said. I'm kind of interested in two of those three players you mentioned them adding. One of which is Whit Merrifield. I just love having guys like him that have a little bit of speed, a little bit of on-base ability. It's a guy that's kind of towards the end of his career at this point. Really kind of got a late start anyways, one of those guys that broke out in his early 30s. But a good veteran presence to have on the team that can kind of fill multiple holes as they need it throughout the year. The other guy is Colby Allard. He's actually a former Braves prospect. I think even last year at the beginning of the year, he was part of the team, and then he kind of got bounced around at the trade deadline. But he has really shown upside at times. And has been a guy that I've enjoyed watching when he's pitched. He just kind of got crowded out of the Atlanta Braves rotation just because of the wealth of talent that they've had in starting pitching. So could be a good guy to watch. He may end up falling off, who knows, but certainly a guy I'm going to keep my eye on. But
Yeah,
as
definitely.
a whole, the Phillies lineup is still star-studded. I expect a bounce back year from Trey Turner. Really overall had a down year last year, kind of picked it up in the playoffs. One of the guys that kind of put the dagger in the Braves once again. And then of course Schwarber and Harper are just guys that are always there and they're always doing their villainous things. So
Yeah.
I expect the Phillies to make the postseason. I don't really have much doubt about that. I just hope somebody else puts them out before they have to play the Braves.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's kind of the hope if you're a Braves fan. Another guy that I want to just touch on a little bit that I was pretty impressed with last year, we saw a little bit of growing confidence in Alec Bohm, a guy that really came on well as a rookie, kind of took a little bit of a dip in 21 and 22, but came back last year, 97 RBIs, 20 home runs, had a decent, 274 average, not too bad. So I'm expecting another increase from Bohm this year. And then you got Kyle Schwarber still, who's probably going to hit under the Mendoza line and probably going to give you 35 to 40 home runs. So that's always fun there. One thing I'm concerned about, I don't know. There's something about the Phillies. I feel like they're bound to break through here. But there's just something that's holding them back. I don't know exactly what it is. But I really thought that they were going to make it to the World Series last year. Weren't they up 2-0 on Arizona? Yeah, they're up 2-0
At
on
least two oh,
Arizona.
yeah.
And then I think they lost 3 games in a row, something like that. Arizona ended up winning in 6 or 7. And that was a bit of a shock there. So we'll see. We'll see with Philly. I like the rotation. I like Wheeler Nola at the top. Ranger Suarez he's a bit of a dangerous starting pitcher three. Taijuan Walker, and then looks at Christopher Sanchez as well. I think maybe, I kind of wish if I'm a Phillies fan that maybe they did hang on to Michael Lorenzen, especially if they got him at a pretty cheap price. I kind of agree with you that maybe they could have used one more guy in the rotation. But I think the Phillies are good. I think they're really good. I think they're almost a shoo-in for a wild card spot again. But come on, they're not challenging the Braves in the regular season.
I think one weak spot is still their bullpen. That's really been something that's plagued them the last couple of years. At times they've kind of filled them up at the trade deadline, but when you look up and down their line, or excuse me, their bullpen, they've got guys like Alvarado, Sir Anthony Dominguez has shown to be really good at times, Soto as well, but they're just not the, wouldn't say elite talent, but not the above average talent that you'd hope to have in a team that's otherwise well rounded. They're really one of the more well rounded teams we've talked about today.
And I think Philadelphia is a team that really seems to thrive on momentum. And that's why they're not the best regular season team, and they can get it going in the playoffs. So we'll see if this is their year. It seems like it's got to be coming up soon, but we'll see. Should be a big year. A lot of decisions made in the offseason, especially about the rotation. So seems like they're, front off. Okay.
There we go.
Sorry, my microphone got unplugged again. I'm having some technical issues here tonight.
No worries. A team that I would consider not to be well-rounded, but to be fairly pitching focused is the Miami Marlins. Another team that's been kind of hanging out on the outskirts of the playoffs, really kind of outskirts of the division, but still there over the last several years. They had a really big loss this offseason, losing Jorge Soler, who really had a bounce back season. By the end of the year, he was one of the best hitters in the league with 36 home runs, 75 RBIs. And they didn't really replace that, did they, John?
No, Z. They didn't. That's a like you said, that's huge. That's a huge loss. And see, when you look at what I mean, I like Jorge Soler a lot, but you look at what he signed for $42 million on a 3-year contract. I feel like I know the Marlins are typically pretty thrifty. I feel like that's not that huge of a contract. I feel like you could have seen him back in Miami for that price.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, I love Kalenic, but Jorge Soler in left field sounds pretty good right now.
He was pretty good. He was a World Series
know?
MVP. Yeah.
He literally has one of the most memorable moments in my Atlanta Braves fandom at this point was his home run he hit in the World Series with his iconic just the way
Emphatic.
he hit the home
Got
run.
it.
It was gone. It was a no doubter, and his reaction was just priceless. I remember there was a fan video that was kind of a raw footage of the scene, and you see Albies coming around third base, kind of waving in, just kind of jogging in, and it was awesome. But the thing that's crazy though is, as big of a loss as Jorge Soler is, it may not even be the biggest loss that they've had in the last year, John.
Dude.
One of your personal favorites, a guy named Sandy. How about that, John?
Yeah, man. Sandy Alcantara is going to be out for the entire season, just coming off of Tommy John surgery at the end of 2023. And in my opinion, Zeke, I think the Miami Marlins are in a rough spot. They lost their best bat and they lost their best pitcher in the same offseason. One to free
True.
agency and one to injury. I think that sucks, especially considering this is a team that made the wild card last year. Like this, they were figuring it out. They were being that other team in Florida that was kind of figuring things out through their evaluation and becoming competitive. And then they get hit with these two big burdens. And Zeke, to your point, I'm kind of dumbfounded that they really didn't do anything to address it. They traded for Nick Gordon with the Twins, and they signed Tim Anderson, who I just collected some of these stats here, right? So Tim Anderson's going to play shortstop. This is a guy, Zeke, that maybe a year or two ago we're like, man, Tim Anderson's going to He's going to come in. He's going to get a big contract. He's going to be a huge free agent. But last year, Z, abysmal. 123 games played. That power is gone. He had one home run, 245 batting average, and his on-base percentage was 286. So this guy's not
Terrible.
drawing any walks, striking out a lot, not hitting for power. Tim Anderson, it is a prove it year, right? So maybe he does right the ship in a sense, but not a guy that's going to replace your production from Jorge Soler by any means.
This really felt like an offseason where the Marlins just wanted to stay pat, knowing that they're facing a pretty top-heavy division with the Braves and the Phillies. And management may be being realistic and saying, you know what, we're gonna pull back our cards a little bit and really save it for when the opportunity is right. So,
But Zeke, that last year though, my only kind of pushback on that is last year we were talking about the Braves, the Phillies, and the Mets. So now if you're Miami, you're looking here, you're heading into the season as a clear number three, right? And you know that you last year two teams qualified from the NL East. So if you keep things consistent, maybe add a piece or two, you're right in the position to be where you were last year and compete for a World Series, or at
That's
least
true.
get that point. So I get what you're saying, but I completely disagree with the philosophy.
Another thing we kept hearing over the offseason was the Marlins trying to move one of their young starting pitchers. Now, that has become their bread and butter, specifically with changeups. It's really been a big pitch for their organization as a whole, and they've seemed to do really well with it in developing talent. So that kind of goes with the philosophy of I really think they are pushing it back and saying this isn't our year. We want to stay competitive and we want to give our fan base something to cheer for. But we're gonna hold our cards for a second.
Yes.
And I really think that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm sure all those Miami Marlins fans that are flooding the gates every time are
Yeah,
very
I
happy with this.
mean, bringing in the all the fans, right?
But I do kind of see your point because I think there's still quite a bit of talent there. Obviously, you've got Luis Arraez, who's as consistent as they come. Little worried about Tim Anderson. Josh Bell, very streaky. A great addition for them last year was Jake Berger, who maybe they were like, hey, we got him from the White Sox. Maybe Tim Anderson will work. But Jake Berger really had a great second half after being traded at the deadline from Chicago. Jazz Chisholm, he's a big question mark. I mean, what we've seen of him when he's healthy is great. Brian De La Cruz, Jesus Sanchez, who's a guy who's kind of been back and forth. Avisaíl Garcia, who's really washed, in my opinion. But there are some decent bats there. But you're right, the strength is in the pitching. I mean, Jesus Luzardo had an amazing year in 2023. Yuri Perez, going to be great. Braxton Garrett having a little bit of injury troubles, but he overperformed last year. So I agree. I think the pitching is always going to keep them competitive. But man, Zeke, could you imagine if they had Pablo Lopez and Sandy Alcantara suiting up? I mean, this is a team that we would be saying is kind of potentially floating around second place in the NL East if they had all that talent.
Sure. Another reason that I will use as my backing for the philosophy, whether it's right or wrong, is they have a guy named Yuri Perez that showed an immense amount of upside last season. They brought him up. He really looked almost like a Cy Young contender in his rookie season. Until they put him on a little bit of a phantom IL stint, basically shut him down middle of the season, sent him down to the minor leagues, and I think it just kind of wrecked his psyche a little bit. He came up, struggled a little bit after that, before finally returning to form. I think I read a report already this spring where management has come out and said that they're going to limit his innings this year. So another move that really didn't need to be made. They didn't really have to say anything about limiting innings. And yet they're already coming out and saying, whether it's sending him down to the minor leagues for a little bit, they would never say this, but doing one of those phantom IL stints teams use from time to time. Just another thing that seems to be a fairly conservative move, for the Miami Marlins.
No, I think that makes you got to wonder too if the remember who was a workhorse for them the last two, three seasons was Saban Contra. So maybe they look at what happened to him and they're like, hey, we want to keep Yuri Perez. We know what he's got. We want to make sure we're fine-tuning this vehicle rather than just running him on running him out there every 5 days consistently. So maybe that's the approach. I don't know, Zeke. I'm a little disappointed in the Marlins, but I still believe that they can find a way to be competitive. They seem to find pretty good scouting with trades and whatnot, so we'll see what happens. Now the next team I want to talk about, Zeke, man, we probably could have spent an hour talking about this team last offseason, but this offseason it's a little bit of a different story, and that is our New York Mets. Couple of moves here. They take Luis Severino from the Bronx over to Queens. So he is now a Met. Harrison Bader as well is now a New York Met. Sean Manaea. Then we've got some other smaller moves. So Jake Dykeman and Sentaro Fujinami, who I believe was he with Baltimore a little bit last year in Oakland.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But I mean, not nearly the amount of caliber that we saw last year with Justin Verlander and the floating Carlos Correa situation, and not a lot going on. But the biggest blow, Zeke, I think something that trumps all of the acquisitions is the unfortunate news that we got from Kodai Senga, who has a capsular shoulder injury. He's going to start the season on the IL. They say he's going to be shut down for at least 3 weeks, but realistically, I mean, we're talking about him potentially missing a couple of months. They said, didn't they say he kind of had like a dead arm, essentially?
I think so, yeah. That sounds right, John.
It's brutal, man. I mean, this is a guy that was working his way in the Cy Young conversation, had a pretty good year last year with New York, and I think the Mets were kind of relying on him to be their ace and take a step forward this year to right that rotation and potentially compete for a wild card spot. If Senga's out for a long period of time, I just don't see it happening.
No, I think the Mets have taken such a turn for the worse. I mean, at this point, you look at the rotation without Senga, and you got Jose Quintana and Luis Severino kind of fighting it out for the top spot. That's not exciting.
No.
Severino 4 or 5 years ago before his injury history, maybe so, but guys like Sean Manaea, who has been okay at times, Adrian Hauser, Tyler McGill. I mean, all of these guys are kind of average to slightly below average, in my opinion, as far as quality and expectation goes. Their lineup, okay, is really led by Lindor and Alonso at this point. They do have guys like Nimmo and McNeil to get on base ahead of those guys, but really one guy I'm looking forward to is one of those additions, and that's Bader. Harrison Bader's been a guy that I've always rooted for because I like his swag. He's got kind of that quiet, stuck-up swag with the Yankees. Who else was he with last year?
Cardinals.
Cardinals
Well,
a
he
little
was there.
bit. But he's never really found his footing. So in this case, I really am rooting for Harrison Bader. See if he can put it together. Because I think he would be good for the league if he could. But I think his swag is good.
I hope he's able to do something. I do. But I think you're right. I mean, Nimmo McNeil, they don't really jump out to me very much. Starlin Marte, as well as a guy who's we've really seen his production decline, especially last year. Hoping that Francisco Alvarez is able to kind of have another good season here. I believe Pete Alonso is heading into a contract year as well. So that's kind of been a big question is, are the Mets going to spend to extend him, which I think they should. But yeah, man, I mean, when you're talking about potentially having Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander here a year ago, now both of those guys are shipped out, and management essentially told Scherzer that they're looking to compete for 2025 and that this year's already kind of seemingly a lost year. Could get ugly, is all
Yeah,
I'll
could get
say.
ugly really quick.
Could get ugly. If you have Kodai Senga, I mean, it changes things a little bit. But now, again, kind of like what we said with Boston, with this big, massive injury loss, you got to wonder, are they going to pull the trigger on Montgomery or Snell? I don't know.
Yeah.
They may just let this one go by the wayside.
Yeah. Comparing teams that we've talked about today, I could see the Red Sox making a push more so than I can the Mets at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm kind of writing off the Mets this year.
Yeah. And I think that's fine. I think management has as well. I think the plan is kind of to rebuild for the future. Last team, Zeke, more of a footnote than anything, okay, is the Washington Nationals. So
And we've already talked about them too much.
yeah,
That's
right.
it.
There we go. There we go. Giving them too much time. But Zeke, there are a couple of things that I'll hear, okay? You add Nick Senzel, who never really got it going in Cincinnati. I mean, then Joey Gallo, okay? We'll give Joey Gallo his due. He's on a 1-year deal with Washington. But there are some decent pieces here, okay? You look at that lineup. CJ Abrams had a really good rookie season. I think he's going to build off of that. Lane Thomas as well hit for a good amount of power last year. You got Joey Gallo, Joey Meneses. Jesse Winker actually joins the club as well, so that's another acquisition. Keibert Ruiz, he's a pretty good offensive catcher. Nick Senzel, Luis Garcia. But Zeke, really, the question is this the year that Victor Robles breaks out? What do you think?
Haven't we been saying that for about 8 to 10 years now?
Yeah.
Funny story about him. I don't know if we've talked about it on the pod before, but you and I had a trade
First year, the
in
first
first year
year.
optometry school.
Yeah.
And at the time, this seemed like a great deal. I had Rafael Devers
Devers, yeah.
and John had Victor Robles, and my guys at CBS kept hyping up Robles. This was before Devers kind of broke out and really right before. So after much negotiation going back and forth, essentially we settled on a one-for-one trade, I think,
Yeah,
right?
it was.
We basically just swapped the guys, and within like 2 weeks, I was regretting it. And
That was an all-timer.
basically regret it to this day.
Along with, I remember 1 year you sent me, was it in football?
Stop.
I traded you Devin Singletary and you gave me Chris Godwin. That was another one of my favorites.
There's also the trade too, where involving Dalvin Cook, where you slipped one in on me. One of those, we're going back and forth, and all of a sudden, I think I've got the trade I want, and yet
You lose out on Dallas Goedert, I think it
I
was.
lose out on Dallas Goedert, who ended up being a great tight end in a tight end premium league. So, you've screwed me over a time or two, John.
Hey. The
All
other
in good
two were
fun.
all you. The other two were all you. And I will admit it was a little bit con man
I
skipping me.
think in that moment, John, the only moment I've truly been mad at you was about that Dallas Goedert deal.
Really?
Yes.
I think I was like, oh, maybe I can't remember. I feel like that, yeah, that was kind of a crappy thing to do, but
Hey, it's all good.
I had to. I had
It's
to.
all good.
I should have just given you Goddard as well, but it was one of those after the fact. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Next.
One thing I will say for the Nationals here, to get back on topic for just a second, is Josiah Gray, who at times has shown upside, especially strikeout upside, has had a really good spring this year. Now, that doesn't mean a whole lot, but it could mean something if we're grasping at straws here. So
Yeah.
keep an eye on Josiah Gray, Mackenzie Gore too, for that matter. Those would be two guys I'll be looking at throughout the season. Not gonna hold my breath for the Victor Robles breakout.
Yeah. Or what about Patrick Corbin? He actually had a not awful year last year. No, I mean, I the fact that he's still pitching, I mean, good for him. Good for Corbin. He's just, out there providing for his family at this point. He's doing great.
Good job, Corbin.
Yeah, I mean, do you think the Nationals beat the Braves in a series this year? You think it happens? Two or three games, or even split a 2-4, I feel like would be a win for the Nationals. Do you think it happens?
I don't think so.
No? Okay, we'll
Right.
see.
Because the Braves have done really well in their division over the last several years. So, but I will say, even back when the Braves were winning the division every year in the 90s and early 2000s, they would always let a team like the Marlins come in and sweep them.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, it didn't make any sense, but they just would. But the Braves' attitude going into spring training this year has been very focused. Really getting that vibe from players and guys like your veterans, Sale and Morton, coming in and really looking dominant to start the spring. I think they've got the right mindset to where they're not going to let something like that happen.
Yeah. Well, we'll
We'll
see.
see.
We'll see. I mean, anything can happen. Anything can
Yeah.
happen. Well, Zeke, I think this was a great conversation. I think we're kind of giving a good primer here for the people. I hope so, at least. Next week, we're talking the AL and the NL Central. I have invited my friend from optometry school. We've talked with him before. Logan England, Dr.
Yeah.
England, is going to be joining us, presumably, next week. So excited to that, excited for that. Excited to talk with you a little bit more about my favorite division. Not my favorite division. Well, my favorite team resides in the division, the AL Central. So we'll
Yes.
see what you guys think about how things are shaping up there, as well as the NL Central, which really feels like a toss-up out of all those divisions. So should be
It
fun.
always does, John. It
It
always
always
just
is.
seems like a toss-up.
It's the Centrals. The Centrals are really bizarre. They really are. And they're really, I don't think this is, again, me getting on a little bit of an aside, but it's so weird that the AL Central and the NL Central seem like they're consistently worse than the East and the West. I don't feel like that happens in much other sports aside from maybe the AFC and NFC South. I think that's kind of a comparison. They're always worse than, no offense, Zeke, I know you're a Titans fan,
No offense taken.
but the AFC and NFC South are always significantly worse than like all the other divisions in baseball as the Central. So for whatever reason. All right, Zeke, any thoughts here? Ready to put a bow on this one.
Let's put a bow on it, John.
Let's do it. Let's do it. We'll see you all next week.